Welcome to Word Warren. This is chapter 10, and we're going to talk about nonfiction,
which is...
Nonfiction.
The opposite of fiction.
And we're done. Goodbye.
That's it. That's the whole episode. Thanks for tuning in.
Okay, joining me today is Hannah over on the controls.
Yep.
And Leah.
Hi.
And there's no Justin today. I'm so sorry.
We're so sad.
Justin.
I mean, there's always the possibility that he'll just like show up halfway through the episode.
It's true.
But,
it's true.
For all intents and purposes, he's not here
right now.
So, Sarah, tell us about nonfiction.
Nonfiction. Okay. I still tried to do my due diligence and look up a bunch of different websites. I found one called thewordcounter.com that was cool. I even read a masterclass article about it. But I think the Word Counter description was the one I liked the best. They all are about the same, obviously, but it's just like they defined nonfiction kind of based on, because it's like the opposite of fiction, basically. Terms fiction and nonfiction represent two types of literary genres, and they're useful for distinguishing factual stories from imaginary ones. So nonfiction is anything that represents factual accounts on past or current events. Or just like facts in general, because, you know, like scientific papers
and textbooks
and all those things would be in the nonfiction genre. That's about it.
Well, and we're just doing an overview of the fiction genre in this episode.
Right, because
we're not deep diving on any one particular fiction.
Yeah.
Because nonfiction, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It's early.
It is still early. It is, yes.
Because nonfiction really does run the gamut, like you said.
So much, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Philosophy, mm-hmm.
Theology,
self-help,
yeah.
Scientific,
biographies,
history,
mm-hmm.
just everything.
Just everything.
Cookbooks.
Yes.
It's probably the most nonfiction I've read is cookbooks.
It's cookbooks.
There's some really good cookbooks out there, though.
They are, yeah.
Real mm-hmm. good. Health and medical.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah. I guess I kind of thought this episode would basically kind of cover our favorite, like, kind of nonfiction to read. Hopefully, that'll be, like, a bouncing off thing where we can go and, like, do further deep dives in later episodes about those specific ones, because to try and cover every subject in nonfiction would be difficult, to say the least.
Yes, absolutely. 110%.
Yes. Obviously, like, a lot of nonfiction is like, I don't read a ton of nonfiction because it's pretty dry for the most part. But if you can find, like, there is the masterclass article that I actually ended up reading was about narrative nonfiction instead of just straight out nonfiction, because
which is the kind of nonfiction that I like,
mm-hmm.
like biographies and stuff like that, memoirs. It's a little mm-hmm. more.
It's like they're still trying
flowy.
To tell a story, but with facts.
Yeah,
instead, yeah. So it's like a lot more. Yeah, like you said, they use like prose instead of just being like here's like.
It feels like you're reading a fiction book.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not fiction.
But it's not fiction. Exactly. Yeah.
It's like, wow, this stuff actually happened. That's insane.
That's crazy. Yeah. Yeah. Going through school and reading textbooks and things like that, they can be very dry and stuff. So when people are able to do narrative nonfiction really well, it's like, wow, I'm like in awe, because normally, like I said, I don't really read nonfiction because it can sometimes be a bit, I don't want to say boring. That's why I keep saying dry.
Like, yeah. It's not that it's not interesting.
Right.
It's just because it's like, yeah, I've read nonfiction that's super interesting, but it just takes me a long time to read it because it is kind of
Especially if
dense,
they get too technical.
That,
right, yeah. If like, it gets too technical, then you're kind of like, oh, I don't really understand what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of times when it's not narrative nonfiction,
mm-hmm.
it is technical, and it's very much like, let me explain this to you,
mm-hmm.
but I'm going to use all the scientific words.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I like science. Yeah, I mean, sure, I love science, but them science words confuse me.
They are. Yes. 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 They're usually very long and
and like Latin.
Yeah. Right.
Stop trying to explain stuff to me in a dead language. That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
Like, either teach me Latin or stop.
Just stop. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. that, I mean, that's basically all I have for the definition portion of this podcast. Pretty straightforward.
And so, I mean, the history of fiction, we were saying before the podcast,
right, yeah.
That it's basically the history of nonfiction is the history of humanity.
Exactly.
Like, as long as humans have had a written language, mm-hmm. we've been like, oh, let's write this thing down that happened.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
I'd say it probably started out with history.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And probably like day-to-day how-to life stuff.
Right, yeah.
Like, oh, mm-hmm. don't go into this part of the forest because there's a tiger that lives there and it's going to eat you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. And then over time, it probably spawned more into like, let me tell the story of my life, or right. let me tell the story of my grandparents' life, or you know, mm-hmm. all that stuff.
I mean, because you could even consider like cave paintings back in the day where it would like tell the migration of herds or like count how many of like wildlife they were hunting or whatever. So, you know, we've been writing stuff down for a long time.
Very much.
a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. A long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, diaries, that makes sense. I listen to a podcast called Ologies, and she basically interviews scientists. So anybody that has like an ology at the end of their, you know, title or whatever. That's like the one historian that she interviewed is like, they love diaries because like, that's like how you get down to like the mundane stuff is like super interesting to them. It's like what, you know, what they did day to day or like how they use tools or whatever in their work and all that. And
I love those kinds of books that are mm-hmm. based off of diaries mm-hmm. or that kind of stuff. One of the books on my list is actually from the log journal of mm-hmm. a ship captain.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He after the voyage, went back and, like, wrote a book, but he based his book off of his journals from the trip.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which...
Very good. Yeah.
Great.
Great.
love yes. that stuff.
Love that. Yeah. Is that? Oh, yeah. That goes back to the narrative nonfiction. As I was going to, one of the things that's really cool about narrative nonfiction is like, because they are trying to tell a story, it's almost like more difficult to write a narrative one because they have to get nuances of like what people were thinking or doing from like just historical documents. And stuff like that. And so, especially if they're writing something that's happened a long time ago, it's easier, you know, probably nowadays to get stuff from that is like current event type stuff. But like historical documents are usually just like, it's all the technical stuff that happened, you know, or whatever.
and there leaves a little bit of room for narrative. There's a little bit of personal interpretation for, you see it a lot when you read books about ancient cultures like Greece or Egypt or any of that kind of stuff where they're talking about these historical figures, trying to make it more readable.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll talk about their day-to-day lives and the kind of things they mm-hmm. thought about. Well, we don't
know for sure, right?
We don't know. Nefertiti did not leave us a journal. We don't know. We don't know what Cleopatra was doing. Like, we don't know. Yeah. But they take a little bit of liberty in creating a character that actually is interesting to read mm-hmm. while still being as historically accurate as you possibly can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the main difference between actual nonfiction mm-hmm. and historical fiction.
Right.
Is the amount of liberties taken.
Exactly. Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. So, short little intro there.
Short little intro.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's nonfiction. It's pretty self-explanatory. Mm-hmm. What are some of your favorite nonfiction?
Genres. Some of my favorites, I think by far, biographies are some of my favorites to read. Although when I was looking at my read list on Goodreads, I realized like I went through like some phases during like my nonfiction reading. Like, so all of it's interspersed with biographies because I really enjoy those. So like If Chins Could Kill by Bruce Campbell was really good. And I especially like his because he liked to play with like format of the book, which I enjoy in like almost any kind of book anyway. So like,
yes, weird formats are the best.
They're so good. And so that was one of my favorite things about his. And he's just interesting, funny, weird guy. But yeah, and I read Felicia Day's biography and Kevin Sorbo's biography, which was actually really interesting. But then outside of that, I like like in high school, I guess I went through a phase where I was reading a bunch of etiquette books. Mm-hmm. So I have like Talk to the Hand and like Why Manners Matter and like just like really weird off the walls. I was reading Emily Post and stuff like that. Like, I don't know, you know. Then I also went through a phase when I got my very first job over at Hastings, the bookstore that used to be out next door. I read a bunch of like word nerd type books. That's what I'm calling them anyway. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure I know exactly the type of books you're talking about based on that description. So, yep.
Yeah, so it was like Reading the OED by Amon Shea and like Six Words You Didn't Know Had Something to Do with Pigs and like stuff like that. Yeah. I like that one. Yeah. I don't remember much about it. It was like a series of essays about, but basically they were all just lists of words that they really liked. That's what it seemed like. Especially the Reading the OED was really funny because he basically just decided he's going to take a whole year of his life and he was going to read the Oxford English Dictionary. Like A to Z.
Crazy.
And then, so as he basically each chapter is one letter of the alphabet, and he would like write about his experiences while he was reading and then at the end of each chapter is like a short list of his favorite words from that letter of the alphabet.
I'm not gonna lie, that sounds like a lot of fun.
It was. Yeah.
Not quite in that serious of a vein, but when I was in like eighth grade into high school, mm-hmm. I used to read a page of the dictionary every single day.
Oh, yeah.
I would just sit down, randomly open the dictionary, and read a page of the dictionary. Nice. Just to improve my vocabulary.
Nice.
Totally good idea.
It's really cool. Do I remember half of the things I read? No, because I don't have good reading retention.
Right.
But yes. it was really cool, and mm-hmm. it was not quite that intense,
right.
obviously, because mm-hmm. it was one page,
right.
and not yeah. like the Oxford English Dictionary. It was just like the bookshelf dictionary that my family
right,
had.
Right,
but
yeah. mm-hmm.
I really like stuff like that
yeah.
because it gives you new words mm-hmm. that you've never heard about before, and it gives you
yeah.
access to knowledge that, you know, oh, hey, I've heard somebody use this word before, but I didn't know what it meant. Or, oh, this word says go see other page. And
right.
so you go check
mm-hmm.
out that page
yeah.
and you're like, wow.
Yeah.
It's fun.
It is really fun. That was one of my favorite things about reading that book also was because, like, I mean, you know, we always had a dictionary sitting on the shelf or whatever, but like the Oxford English Dictionary is actually what they consider a lexicon, which is it also has a lot about the history of the words in there, not just the definitions, which is really, that sounds interesting to me.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the Oxford English Dictionary has so much extra information mm-hmm. that it's really, really cool. Regular mm-hmm. dictionary, just kind of fun.
Just kind
the
of,
Oxford yeah. English Dictionary is mm-hmm. informative.
Yes, yeah. It definitely, and it inspired me to go down and like every once in a while, if I see a cool looking dictionary, I still will just like randomly buy dictionaries.
I used to own so many dictionaries.
Yeah.
Guilty.
Yeah.
Guilty of that. I still actually, though, own my family's old dictionary
oh,
that
yeah.
I used to read out of.
Nice, yeah.
It probably doesn't have some of the words that, like, are now in the dictionary
oh, yeah.
because it is older than I am.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But it's this awful blue-green fabric cover
yes.
that was yeah. falling apart, so it's actually taped together. It's awful looking.
Right.
But that dictionary has moved with me
nice.
Through my
yeah.
entire adult life. Like, I took it when I left home,
nice.
And it just has stayed in my book collection. And I still use it. Like, if I'm like, I want to look up a word, I'm
yeah.
just like, here's my dictionary.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I love it. I even, like, went down because I specifically bought like right after I finished that book, an illustrated dictionary, which has like it's much thinner than even a standard dictionary. So, but like most of the definitions that are in it have some sort of illustration to
Ooh,
them.
I love that.
And so, and it's like one of my favorite ones still, because I like the little. They're like, yeah, they're just little pencil drawings.
Huh.
Like, yeah,
I love that.
Yeah. I don't know that since I'm monopolizing the topic here or whatever, but
hey, I mean, that's fine.
Those are some of my favorites that I read of nonfiction.
I
so
feel like I really like the essay format, like where it's just a series of essays, because my favorite nonfiction book I've ever read, which Theater Nerd is called The Dramatic Imagination, Reflections and Speculations on the Art of Theater. Ooh. It was so interesting to read it. And it's just different directors or different artisans within theater just submitted essays on what they thought theater was. And it's just,
wow,
cool. Yeah.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds really interesting, actually.
Yeah. I loved it. I don't think I read it for a class, but when I was really into theater and taking and going to college for theater, I saw it and I was like, I'm going to read that. And it was great.
I like it.
Is that your nonfiction?
Pretty much.
I know you were saying that you didn't read a ton of nonfiction.
I don't read a lot ton. I was just looking at it, and it's funny because like the last two nonfiction books I thought were kind of funny because it was The Devil in the White City and Devil's Teeth. And I was like, they have nothing to do with each other, obviously, because Devil in the White
Except
City is about
the devil.
I know, right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But they were both super interesting.
Huh? I said, are you a witch?
I mean, yeah, yes, I am. Yeah.
She's a witch. Yeah. I own The Devil in the White City, and I have not read it yet.
Yes, I read it. It took me a really long time. He really, really tried to make a story out of it, and it's two stories in one because it's about H.H. Holmes, obviously.
Yeah.
Built a murder hotel during the 1920 World's Fair.
I think whatever. So, yeah. Oh, man, if you guys don't know who H.H. Holmes is, you are missing out.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. And it's his story along with, and now I can't remember the other guy's name. Just terrible. Oh, no, it's Ferris. He's the guy that created the Ferris wheel.
Oh, okay.
Because that's what he did for the World's Fair. He built a Ferris wheel. He was competing with the guy, who created the Eiffel Tower. And he was like, I'm going to make this thing. And they call it a Ferris wheel now, obviously, because he created it. And they've built bigger ones now, but it was the biggest one. And they put it up for the World's Fair. And so it was kind of a, like, telling the story of these two men building these things that are so different. Right.
Like, ooh, the juxtaposition would just be really cool.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
One is for the entertainment of the masses and one is for murder.
Yes. Yeah. It's just.
Yikes.
Yeah. Oh my God. It was. Yeah. I think. Yeah. And so it's he tried really hard to make it interesting, and it was interesting, but it did take me a long time to read that one.
Well, I find that to be with most nonfiction, as far as especially if it's depending on the topic that it's talking about, I have to take breaks from it quite often because it's so much information in there. Yeah. So,
and that, I think that's a lot of it, because some of the things that H.H. Holmes built into that hotel were just horrifying. And then I took like a month off one time after reading about one of his murders, and I was just like, that's terrible. I can't do this.
H.H. Holmes is scary.
Yeah.
Like legitimately terrifying to learn about.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
But you should talk about The Devil's Teeth.
Oh, yes. Yes. That one. The Devil's Teeth was, I really liked it. I feel like that was a little loud, but really liked that book. It was so good because The Devil's Teeth are a series of islands off the coast of San Francisco. It's like, I don't know. I don't know how far it is. A couple hours, just like straight from the bay. What it is that it's a feeding ground for great white sharks. And they just come once a year for a couple months, and they just eat and eat and eat, and then they leave. And it's not a breeding ground because they've documented it. They have like scientists go out there on these two lighthouses that used to be set up there. They have like set little things set up for them to watch it, and they actually segregate themselves, the great white sharks. So there's females on one side and males on the other, and they just eat seals and then they leave, and they have no interaction with each other. Like,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And the females get the better part because they're bigger than the males.
Yeah.
Which I thought that was cool.
Yeah. Shark ladies.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And so the devil's teeth is kind of one of those, you know, it's like it could mean so many different things because
it's like marine biology and ecology.
Yeah. Because there's so many things. Like, there's, it's just like these random, this like devil's teeth is like, they had these lighthouses set up because obviously there's a very treacherous section of islands because they're very rocky and all that stuff. But then they had these birds living on these islands. And that was a big part of the economy, was these guys would come out and get these bird eggs, which they're now like almost extinct and they can't do that anymore. And then there's this one guy that comes out there every year, and he has to come out during the feeding time of these sharks to collect like oysters, or I don't even think it's oysters now, but it's like he has to dive down with these giant sharks in the middle of everything to collect these things. He makes a lot of money off of these things that he fishes, and he has to dive into the water with these things because it's the only time that they're like,
I mean,
available or whatever.
To like, be fair, yeah. Like sharks don't really like eating humans.
I mean, true.
We yeah, taste gross.
True. I mean, yeah.
The only reason people yeah. usually get attacked by sharks is because sharks have really bad eyesight yeah, exactly. and they mistake us for like seals and yeah. stuff. So mm-hmm.
and yeah, and they like you know, the writer was she was a journalist, and she just heard about this, and she just went out and was hanging out with these scientists, and she met this guy, and he like he's been doing it for like 25 years or whatever, and he has had one close call with one of the lady giant, like she's like 25 feet long or whatever, and like and he got stuck underwater for a while because she was just swimming around him. And he's just like, what the fuck are you doing? Get Leah. Out of here.
Excuse me, ma'am. Ma'am, this is a Wendy's. I have to bleep that out.
I'm sorry. I said the F word.
Oh, man. If I had my box of F bombs, I would throw one at you. It's fine. We'll edit it and post. Yeah. That sounds really interesting.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, I kind of want to read that. Yes. It sounds really good.
It's really good. Really interesting.
Sharks, man.
Sharks.
Yes.
Terrifying and fascinating.
Yes. I love sharks. I think they're such cool animals. Like, it's such a bad rap.
Yeah.
I mean, but they're just big, angry sea dogs.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yes.
I feel like reading that book was another fact I learned about it is because they've never been able to keep a great white shark in an aquarium.
Yeah.
Like the one time they had a great white shark in like Australia somewhere for like 6 months, and that's like the longest they've ever had it, and it just like refused to eat.
Yeah, they don't do well in captivity.
Yeah, they're like no.
No. I mean, I don't blame them.
I mean, yeah. Yeah. No. No.
So I found that my nonfiction reading taste is kind of all over the place. Mm-hmm. I really like true crime. Yeah. I really, really enjoy true crime. And then I like a lot of history stuff, but more like the narrative history instead of just like, oh, let's talk about the Civil War. It's, you know,
right. Yeah.
More
yeah.
narrative stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And self-help stuff, or not necessarily like self-help, but that kind of that vein. Most of the ones that I like are historical stuff or science-based. One of the ones that I really, really, really loved, I read during my anthropology course. Yeah. It was the required reading for the course, but it's quickly become like one of my favorite books. Yeah. And it's called The White Man Will Eat You by William Edward Wormsley. And Wormsley is a very well-renowned anthropologist who went to live with the Umbagu people in New Guinea.
Mm, okay.
And he lived with them for, I think, a couple of years, like a year or two. And it is his journey living with them and trying to understand their culture from the standpoint of, you know, a white Western person and trying to take off that lens and understand their culture for what it was instead of like what people assume it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a fascinating book just about their lives and their mythologies and their lore of when they first met the white people. They literally thought that the white people would eat them. Oh. Like that was their like stay away from the white people because they're dangerous and they'll eat you kind of thing. Like they're all cannibals and like that kind of stuff. So it was like really, really interesting. And then the one I was talking about earlier is Shackleton's Boat Journey by F.A. Worsley. And Worsley was the captain of the HMS Endurance, which is the ship that Shackleton sailed on for his famous Arctic expedition.
Okay.
And so Wormsley was with Shackleton during that entire expedition. And so it talks about the ship getting stuck in the ice and them having to take the long, long journey on foot because their dogs ended up dying.
Oh, man.
To the nearest town to where they got stuck, which was days and days of travel in the Arctic.
Oh, man.
And it talks a lot about just Shackleton's endurance. Like, this man was lucky and unlucky, but just never let, like, unflappable.
Right.
And he just inspired his crew. Very few people died.
Wow.
which was amazing. And it was mostly because Shackleton was just like, hey, come on, guys, we got this. Like, let's go. Like, wow. We'll be fine. kind of stuff.
Interesting.
It's a really, really good read. He does a good job of doing that narrative, kind of making it a fun book to read while still just being, this is what happened.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's terrible, but amazing. Yeah. And then, of course, Knight by, oh my gosh, I'm going to say his name wrong. It's Elie? Elie Wiesel?
Yeah.
My whole life I've heard it Elie Wiesel, and I know that is just the wrong pronunciation, but my brain wants to do it.
Right. Yeah.
Because that's the only way I've ever heard it said. Mm-hmm. Amazing, heartbreaking story. He was a young man during the Holocaust. Mm. And it's his story of being taken, putting it into the concentration camps, losing his family. And he writes it with such emotion, but also just stark facts. Mm. It's a short book. It's really small, but it feels super big.
Right.
Like, it's just heavy, but so good. I've read it, oh God, tens of 20s of times.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I used to read it once a year, and I've fallen off of that. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, top tier. Those are the kind of books that I find myself reading. The other two on my list were Bloody Business, which is a true crime history of Scotland Yard.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's like true crime and history kind of mixed together. Talk about some of the unsolved cases of Scotland Yard, like Jack the Ripper and that kind of stuff, but also go into the founding of Scotland Yard and how all of that came to be and all of that.
That's really cool. That
sounds really cool.
Yeah. It's a really, really good read. The author does a good job, again, of making it fun, but also just giving you the facts.
Okay. It's one of those things where it's like, I love true crime so much. And Devil in the White City is the only true crime book that I've ever read. Like, I always listen to the podcasts about it instead. Like,
yeah.
That's.
I mean, same. Yeah. Like, I for a long time only listened to true crime podcasts, and then I started picking up true crime books. Yeah. And I enjoy them. I think they're fun, especially if they're written well. Yeah. It's. Obviously, you get some that are just boring.
I mean, yeah.
You're like, I could find this out on Google.
Yeah, right?
In about 3,000 less words.
Yeah.
And then the self-help one that I really, really like that I recommend to a lot of people is called The Gift of Fear by Gavin D. Becker. Hmm? And it is an amazing book about learning to trust your intuition, like your instincts.
Okay.
He worked as not quite a private detective or like a consultant to a lot of celebrities over the years who were dealing with stalkers and stuff like that. And he talks about how as a society, we have been conditioned to not listen to fear when we feel afraid. Mm. Like we rationalize it. Oh no, this person doesn't, I'm just overreacting.
Right.
But how it's really important to, even if you don't act on it, how it's really important to listen to that,
right?
Because we are creatures that evolved to survive based on fear,
right?
Okay. And so it's, even though we live in a modern society, it's really important to make sure that you're still listening to that. And he goes into a lot of, besides just that, he goes into like, hey, if you are dealing with a stalker, here's the ways that you need to don't engage them. Make sure you're filing reports. Make sure you're keeping evidence. Like all of this kind of stuff to help people survive situations that they might not survive.
Right.
Wow.
Ooh, interesting. Yeah.
I like that.
I got it as a gift. Like 1 year from my family, I think. I don't even remember who gave it to me.
Yeah.
But they were like, man, I read this and I really liked it. And so I just wanted to share it. Like, no, this is a great book. This is a fantastic read. It is one of those ones that's hard to read, just like sit down and read. Yeah. I read it in segments over the course of a year, I think. Like occasionally I just pick it up, read a chapter, and then put it down.
Mm-hmm. That's probably
good. 'Cause it's not narrative. It's not.
Right.
It reads more like a manual, like a how-to manual than anything else. Like it's like, hey, let me describe the story of this lady who was getting stalked in 3 pages, and then I'm going to spend the next 7 pages telling you how you should react in a situation similar to this. A step-by-step how-to.
Okay,
so those are kind of the things that I
cool
non-fictiony
yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Kind of stuff.
Cool.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I like it.
Actually, you reminded me when you were talking about that anthropology book that you had mentioned earlier.
The White Man Will Eat You.
Yeah.
I love the name.
I mean, that's a great name.
It is a great name, yeah. It reminded me of a book I read by Wade Davis called The Serpent and the Rainbow.
Ooh.
And it was really interesting. So Wade Davis is an anthropologist, and I forget the actual technical name for what he does, but he basically studies ancient cultures based on their usage of like plants, like both for medicine and for cooking, like how they used and gathered plants and stuff like that.
I love that.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I mean, his specific book was actually, I read it because I got one of those page a day calendars that was all about zombies.
Oh, nice.
And it was one of the book recommendations. and it was really interesting because he went down to Haiti to interview two people who had claimed to be zombies.
Oh, okay.
And
Haitian zombies are some of the coolest like yeah. stuff. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it was really interesting because like both of the people had disappeared like off the face of the planet and then just suddenly came back all of a sudden and walked up to their like family member and was like, hey, I spent the last 7 years as a zombie. Hi.
Oh, wow.
Whatever.
Hi.
And everybody's like, oh my we thought you were dead or whatever. Yeah. And he's like, and so he just kind of went down there and interviewed them. And he also talked to some voodoo, I think is what they call
the voodoo.
To see if he could learn how to create a zombie or how.
You know, which is like a super secret practice that they're definitely not going to tell you.
Yeah. But he did, you know.
Nice try.
Yeah. But he actually, I mean, he got a lot of information. Because he basically just asked him about like plants and things that they use for medicine down there too. And he kind of like piecemealed together a thing where he'd go away that he thinks, you know.
Yeah.
And obviously like, you know, whether or not you believe even zombies, I guess, in real life. But like, yeah.
We actually did an episode on the Underground Files about mm-hmm. like different kinds of zombies. And the Haitian zombies specifically, they're called zombies because of like pop culture and stuff. Mm-hmm. But really, it's like putting someone into a medically induced trance and just turning them into puppets.
Right.
Like just super, super suggestible. Mm-hmm. They usually serve the voodoo for however long.
Right.
And then once you stop giving them this concoction, whatever it is, mm-hmm. they eventually, provided they don't have any mental damage.
Right.
Eventually wake up mm-hmm. and are able to go back to their lives.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Yeah.
It's so cool. I want to read it. I love plants.
Right. Cool. Okay. I don't know. I like this episode. This was fun.
I look forward to getting to deep dive into some of these categories mm-hmm. eventually and like really talk about like the bones of some of the other stuff. Mm-hmm. Like obviously. Regardless, if we do nonfiction, it's always going to be like, hey, this is nonfiction.
This is nonfiction. Right, exactly.
This stuff is true stuff. but getting to talk more about like...
Yeah, like a specific subjects. Like, I'd love to do something about like biographies because that's one of the things I love. But,
Biographies and memoirs.
And memoirs
would be super, super fun. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I know Justin reads a lot of philosophy. He had mentioned maybe talking about that on an episode.
I'm super bummed that Justin couldn't make it today. I feel like Justin would have carried this episode.
Right. Probably.
Because he like reads so much nonfiction.
So much more nonfiction than we do.
And he talks about it all the time. And I'm like, this would have been a great episode. Great episode. But we'll have plenty of options or plenty of opportunities, mm-hmm. not options. Oh, yes. Come on. I'm so tired.
Okay.
We'll have plenty of opportunities to discuss nonfiction stuff. Nonfiction. Oh, I'm excited.
Yes, me too. And I'm just going to also, just because you talked about that Scotland Yard one, what was that one called again?
It's called Bloody Business.
Bloody Business.
An Anecdotal History of Scotland Yard by H. Paul Jeffers.
I'm going to have to read that one, but also that just reminded me because you mentioned Jack the Ripper as well as nonfiction book that I really, really, really want to read is called The Five, which is about Jack Ripper's five victims.
Ooh.
And I've been meaning to, it came out 3 years ago, something like that. And I just I really want to read it, but it's always one of those things where it's like, I always buy another book or whatever. Like,
and what I think is interesting about that one, because I've always meant to read that one as well, is because it specifically talks about their lives and stuff before they became his victim. So they're not like, it's not about Jack the Ripper.
Yeah.
It's about
There's been enough women. Talking about Jack.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how it always works, yeah. though, right? Like, yeah. we focus more on the serial killers than we do on the victims, which is yes. unfortunate.
Yes.
Yes. Tip of the hat to Underground Files. Did you guys hear that they might have identified the Zodiac Killer?
Oh yes. I heard about that,
actually.
Like, a random small group of, like, novice detectives.
Oh my gosh. Amazing.
think they figured out who he was.
Amazing.
And I think that is hilarious.
Yes.
That yes. it took the police this many years, and then a bunch of, like, people in their basement were like, hey, we know who he is.
We know who he is.
I love that. I mean, I love that. I'm so glad that happened. Just especially, I mean, it was not very long ago that they caught the Golden State Killer.
Yeah. Right?
And it took a novice. I mean, she was just an investigative reporter.
What I'm saying is we should let novice crime fighters solve more cases.
Yes,
we should.
Yes, exactly. Oh, yeah. I love that. That's... I love it when that happens. When
I really would like to read a book about that. Like, I would really love to read a book about the amount of cases that have been solved by novice detectives or investigative journalists. Like, mm-hmm. that would be a really fun book for me to read. To be like, oh, and despite all of the detectives and police on the case, it was cracked open by this person who has no investigative background.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
No, that would be incredibly interesting.
Or even the ones that's literally solved by, you know, the one guy that's like, hey, that looks like my neighbor. Like,
yeah, right. Yes,
yes.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I can think of a few off the top of my head that happened like that too. And they're just like incredibly interesting. I would love to read a book like that.
I mean, yeah.
So what we're saying, people who write true crime books, that's your next multi-million dollar idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Just put us in your foreword.
Thank you, yes.
Thank you, AU Radio Podcast, The Word Warren, for giving me this brilliant idea.
Yes. Yes.
That's all we want.
Yeah, all we want. It really is, yes.
I guess I don't have any plot points for this week.
Oh, yeah. I don't have anything either.
Yeah. Well, No books that I can't remember the titles of or can't Google myself.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
But I guess,
yeah. I forgot. I can mention the book club.
Oh, hey, the book club book. Yeah, what are we reading this month?
The book club we are reading, it's called The Arrest by Jonathan Latham. And it's kind of like a post-apocalyptic sci-fi, but I heard it described as soft apocalypse because nothing like cataclysmic happens or anything. It's just like all of the electronic devices on Earth just stop working. And it's kind of just how people try to make a living after that. Cause like once there's, cause the main character is like a script writer in Hollywood. And it's like, now we can't make films. So what do you do with your life?
Like, stage, please. Return to the theater.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. So, and it's, so that'll be, it's the first Friday of November.
I forget I believe the actual that's date. The 4th.
Okay. It's
no,
the 4th. It's the 5th. Yes. So it'll be the 5th.
Remember the 5th of November.
Oh, yes.
Now you definitely can.
Now you can.
Yeah, that should be a fun read. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. We're almost in November.
We are almost in November.
Yeah. Wow.
It's crazy.
This is crazy, guys. I just wanted to give a shout out real quick to our Patreon subscribers. We really appreciate you guys supporting us, helping us create these episodes.
Yes,
we really, it's amazing the amount of you that have just stuck around on Patreon,
right?
despite all the hiccups of 2020 and us having to take a several month hiatus from recording. And we really, really appreciate it.
Yeah.
And if any of you listeners out there would like to support the show, you can find us on patreon.com/ADB underground. It really does. It helps us buy equipment. It helps us pay for the staff to be on the show.
Right.
Helps pay for me to sit up here and edit.
Yes, to make the episodes
thank
beautiful.
Thank you very much for all of that.
Yes, thanks.
But hey, Sarah, thank you for being here.
Yes, and thank you, Hannah.
You're welcome.
And thank you,
Hannah. Yeah, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
It's been fun.
It was so fun.
You've been listening to The Word Warren on AU Radio Podcast Network. If you're interested in any of the titles from today's episode, you can check out the link tree in the description to visit Adventure Underground at their online store, or their virtual storefronts hosted by bookshop.org and libro.fm. Physical, digital, or audio, Adventures Underground has you covered. If you'd like to contact the show, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just check out that link tree in the description. Or you can email the show at podcast@advunderground.com. You can also support this show and all the awesome shows on AU Radio that you love by becoming a patron of the AU Radio Podcast Network. You can find us at patreon.com/advunderground. For as little as $1 a month, you can help us continue to create these shows, and soon, many more.
You've been listening to the AU Radio Podcast Network. Music is provided by CubbyPurplePlanet.com and BenSound.com. Views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Adventures Underground. AU Radio is a production of Adventures Underground. Copyright 2018. All rights reserved.